Welcome to the I-29 Moo U Dairy Podcast. The I-29 Moo University is a consortium of the land-grant universities located in Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska. This podcast covers timely news, information, and research for today's dairy industry. Hi, my name is Jim Sulfer. I'm a University of Minnesota Regional Dairy Educator, and I'm joined with my co-host here today and colleague, I consider him a colleague, Fred Hall from Iowa State University. Welcome, Fred.
Well, thank you, Jim. You know, these podcasts, when we first started, I didn't even know what a podcast was. But I tell you, doing a podcast with you has really become fun. And you always pick fantastic people to invite on, and we've done it again.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have Dr. Amber Adams-Progar. She's a professor and dairy management specialist at Washington State University. And I've really been fortunate. I don't know, when was it, Amber? About 10 or 15 years ago, you were at the University of Minnesota and did a project together. Yeah, we did a project, really Amber did all the work, on automatic calf feeder project. So you may have seen that published, but all that work was done by Amber. And she was just talking about our miserable winter that we had the winter. And I think it was that winter of the polar vortexes when it was, you know, a high day over a couple months, well, I think about zero. So she was out trooping on those barns.
Oh, Jim, you have no idea. We were out at these farms collecting blood samples from calves and hutches, right? And the blood would freeze in the needle before it got into the tube. That's how cold it was. That's what we were doing.
Yeah, it was really cold. But anyway, Amber had written an interesting article about a month or so ago, and her background really is animal behavior. And so our topic today is going to be how human attitude and behavior around these animals actually affects the behavior and well-being of cattle. So, Amber, did I do a little introduction? Do you want to tell a little bit more about your background?
Oh, well, I noticed you didn't mention my experience with lizards, but that's okay. That's for another time. So we'll leave that out for today. But no, I thought that was a great introduction, Jim. And thank you, Fred and Jim, for allowing me to come share some of our stories and some of the experience we have in dairy cattle behavior. And I just want to preface by saying that, you know, really, we don't like to talk a lot about like mental health or well-being, you know, sometimes as farmers. And so really was trying to look at a way of saying, you know, your well-being affects more than just you and your family and your employees. It also affects your animals. And so that was kind of the perspective that we started this story on.
Yeah, I think it kind of wraps safety into there, which I think is interesting. And I think it's important to talk about. There was some research that was done in 2019, and I'm not familiar with that research at all, but do you want to expound on that? It was some research looking at farmers that had lower levels of stress, their cows had better performance.
Yeah, Jim, it was a really great study. It was actually done over in Norway, but I think that the topic fits just fine if whether you're in Minnesota or Washington just as well, right? Over 900 farmers that they worked with to try to get this data. 900 farms represented, which is really a phenomenal, you know, a set of data. But they were looking at farmer stress and well-being and try to get a feel for how farmers were feeling as far as their stress level, as well as things like loneliness and fear and sadness, and then compared it to how their animals were doing. They used an animal welfare index that encompassed things like animal longevity. Obviously, you know, longevity is important to us in the industry. They looked at things like fertility, how their animals were doing reproductively, as well as health and other factors. And there was a strong correlation there. Farmers that were doing better themselves from a well-being and stress standpoint, their animals were doing better too. Which that study, it just really struck me, right? Because making that connection between, okay, if I as a farmer am doing better and taking care of myself, it's also benefiting my animals, and that's where, you know, they're my income. And so really it's a win-win if I take better care of myself. So it was, what a phenomenal study though, to take, you know, two almost completely different things that we usually don't bring together, right? And saying there is a relationship here. So I just thought that was a great study.
Yeah, you can see where that becomes a vicious circle on farms, right? When we get impatient and high strung with our animals. Well, then they get high strung and they kind of running around. Well, the more they run, the more upset we get. I mean, all the listeners have probably been in that situation where it just kind of escalates from one thing after another. And I think you're talking a little bit more, not about a specific situation, but just chronically, if you're chronically stressed and high strung around your animals and cattle, that eventually they react to. I mean, a good example is robot farms. You go in those farms where people aren't in the pens chasing cows, those cows become so tame. I mean, it's just kind of unbelievable. And so animals, I think you're right, Amber. I've always been fascinated because I think animals are really a reflection in a way of their owners, you know, or their temperament. Not every animal, of course. You always got those that need to become a to become need to become hamburger. But otherwise, a lot of times, Fred, do you have any comments? I thought this article was really interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up and just say, we all recognize when we walk in a barn, broken tails and scars. But Amber, help me focus away from those obvious things to some of those little things. I mean, I remember I would milk for dairymen when I went to college, and I'd walk into barns, and if the dairyman was loud and jerky in his movements, I'd see those head dodges and all that. What do you see? What are some of those non-obvious things that you picked up on?
Right, you bet, Fred. So, gosh, I'm gonna hit the nail right on the head here, okay? And I'm just gonna give everyone that's listening something to think about. So, there's numbers out there that if you think about cows going into the parlor, right? You've invested in every drop of milk that's in that udder, right? That was an investment. If something happens that startles that cow and causes a distress, right? Causes that animal distress. It's gonna take, her body's gonna react, right? So she's in the holding pen. Her body is now under distress. She's having a reaction, a response to that distress, which is negative, right? Which means what? She walks into that parlor, you hook her up to milk her, or even if it's a robot milker, she walks in to get milk. And you're not going to get every drop. And why is that? Well, because we talk a lot about like cortisol and oxytocin, right? And milk letdown. There's things that, there's numbers out there that say, gosh, it could take you up to 20 minutes after that response for them to finally calm down enough to give full milk letdown. And you've just lost money, right? And so that's something that's always struck with me a little bit is that idea of, gosh, you got to make sure everything's peaceful, quiet, just a nice, relaxed atmosphere. So those cows walk in and they give you every drop of milk that you invested in. So that's one thing. And then you could tell sometimes cows are smart. I don't know if you guys notice that sometimes on the farm, but they are smart. And so they remember if there's a certain handler or a certain milker that's always a little bit on edge, right? They remember that and they will try to avoid that person. Sometimes avoidance behavior can result in running or fleeing, right? And that's when they can slip and fall. If they start to have that fear response, now you're talking about a dangerous situation where they might charge a person because they can't find an escape route, any of those things. So they remember if you've got someone on the farm that's, maybe not doing so well stress-wise or has that chronic stress Jim talked about, those cows will remember that. So it's amazing. They are so smart.
A story that I was out with a colleague. I got a call, and it was a herd that thought they had stray voltage. They were just convinced they had stray voltage, and so Jeff and Renault and I went out there, and we observed a milking procedure, and we were watching. And after we were done observing, Jeff said, "You know, the only stray voltage they've got is a cane sitting in the parlor." And what would happen, and the farmer wasn't, and the milkers weren't doing that, they weren't being mean to the cows. They were not beat. What they were happening is the cows would be coming into the parlor on their side, and they would take the cane and just poke them a little bit and to get them to move. It wasn't hard, it wasn't malicious. But I think again, you've got to think of a cow in a parlor. She can't see, right? All she could feel is that poke. Well, okay, that was not by her udder, but on her back, you know, somewhere they would poke her. Well, then they would go to milk her, and this was one of their complaints. They were kicky. Well, of course they were kicky because they couldn't tell the difference whether that was a poke just to get them to move ahead. And again, you'd be surprised, it was not malicious. It was not like this farm. So I think you really make a good point, Amber. I think it's really important to be called. The other thing I read, I don't know, this was several years ago, but a cow's normal walking speed is about half of a human. So if you're in a pen, for example, chasing up cows to the holding area or whatever, if you're walking at what you would consider a normal speed for cows, that's really fast. It's they feel like they're being chased. So, and I think part of it, Amber and Fred, is being in tune with cows' behavior and understanding they're prey animals. So they're always on the lookout for something to be after them. And so I think it's just important to think about those things as you move forward.
For sure. I mean, I think you bring up a good point with that. And with calves, it's even, their vision when they're little calves, pre-weaned calves, is even worse, right? And so when you're approaching calves and you're working really fast, and that's just boggling to their eyes, right?
Yeah, I suppose the movement, huh?
Right. Yep. And also thinking about how cows see, we've talked a lot about handling and obviously the cows can't see directly behind them and directly right in front of them, and those are their blind spots, right? So when people are walking, we see this a lot with students and brand new employees, right? Because things that Jim, Fred, and I, whoever's listening, you might think common sense. This is common sense. You do not walk directly behind a cow. However, when you have a student or a new employee, that's not common sense for them. They don't know that, right? And so when we talk about safety and behavior, there's so many things that we take for granted sometimes, right? And we think everybody knows this, but they don't. And so really trying to take a step back and say, okay, if I didn't have any experience, prior experience handling animals, handling cattle, what would I need to know? And then taking those minutes to really help those new employees understand that it can make a big difference.
I'm going to go back to the time frame you indicated, once that cortisol hits 20 minutes. And is that a good time frame? That sounds awful short, that if we're moving cattle and somebody rattles up the pan, I'm big about saying, hey, let's go have a soda pop and let them settle down. And is 20 minutes the amount of time it takes for that to clear their system? We can start over again.
I mean, it's probably a little bit longer, right? But it's starting to at least, they've peaked and now they're starting to maybe calm down a little bit. But I think it also depends on the severity, right? So if it was something that was a slight startle, that response is not as strong as, something that was really, really caused them fear or distress, so the severity makes a big difference too. A cow that maybe had a misstep or something and slipped and actually went down and had to get back up, it's going to take her a little bit longer, right?
I was just wondering, Amber, as you were talking there, what are the activities that really startle cows? We know what startles us. Is it movement? Is it loud noises? Do you know, or have you studied the literature well enough to know what are the activities or things that we would do that we may not be aware of
Right,
that
right.
really are stressful to cows or cattle?
Yeah. Gosh, the number one thing that comes to mind is routine, right? Cows love routine. And so anything that changes their routine, they start to take notice. And sometimes that they also become a little more difficult to handle. So, for example, if you need to move your cows to a different area, separate area for hoof trimming, right? And that's not something they do every day, a couple times a day. That's a novel environment, even though they might have seen it before, right? But it's not part of their day-to-day routine. And so getting those cows to that hoof trim chute is gonna be a little bit trickier. So that can cause them to startle because you're changing up their routine. Routine can include people. So they're used to their people. I know sometimes we'll have field trips come through, right? And the cows in the parlor, they'll start looking around a little bit more, maybe getting a little bit twitchy in the parlor because we have, some kids coming through, and kids can be loud sometimes too, which is another thing, noise, right? So a lot of noise can startle them. Gosh, we've always tried to use that rule of thumb that if we're gonna go move cattle, the safest and hopefully the best way to move them is using your body, right? And I don't mean touching them. I mean where you place your body, okay? So, we talk about using like point of balance and things like that and flight zones and, to try to move them without touching them and without using noise. So that's our number one. Number two, if number one doesn't work, then we start increasing a little bit of noise. We introduce some noise to it. Okay. So maybe whistling, things like that. There's some noisemakers I've seen on some farms that would scare the skin off a cat, I think. Like it's just, they're so loud. And I think about heifers in particular, right? And being introduced to a new environment, new parlor. New animals, they might have a new hierarchy they're trying to establish with their new group. And now you're introducing this really loud noise. That's just a bad situation as far as causing the animal stress. So noise. Now, if noise, adding some noise doesn't work, whistling or, some talking doesn't help, then that's where we have to start using possibly touch, as far, and I don't mean hitting, obviously, but maybe if there's giving them a little push or something like that. But we really try to, if we can use our body movements without touching them to move them forward and get them where we want to be safely, that's number one. And the touch, once we start touching, we also are introducing possibility of being injured. One of the number one injuries for dairy employees is crushed fingers. And I mean, that makes complete sense to me. I think about how many times my hand was in the wrong place at the wrong time, right? And so once you start, possibly, touching animals, thinking about fences and things like that, just keeping hands off is one of our best things we can do. But I know we got to move animals into the parlor or wherever we need to be too. So
Yeah, one
I
of my
just, I,
comments always or go is always gates are your friend. I mean,
Yeah.
think about where you can put things. So, Fred, what's your comment? And then Amber,
I
what's
was
your
just going to show her this is what a hand looks like when you've broken every finger in the hand.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't smart enough. I didn't learn from the first time.
Yeah, I mean, that's really common. I mean, just really common for those reasons.
Yep.
It is.
Now, one of the things that I'm seeing is because we are taking heifers to someplace else and raising them, a lot of times on dirt, on fence line feeders, being worked horseback in some instances. When I'm getting or seeing clients bring those heifers back, there's some things that we have to think about, not just for our safety, but for the animals. If they've not been on cement before, that's a pretty new experience for a lot of these, 1,100-pound bred heifers. They've been out in West Texas or Western Oklahoma, and all of a sudden they come through the gate and it may be wet and shiny. It just may be cement, and that's a new feeling for them. So, learning the animals and us learning how to deal with it, pretty important, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, you're 100% right. We bring up heifers a lot, but truly those are some of our harder to handle animals, right? They don't know the routine yet. Some of those older cows that know the routine, they know what they're doing. They could lead by example, but those heifers that have never been through it before, some of the cases you're talking about, Fred, gosh, this animal has to adjust to probably more intimate handling from humans, most likely, which is not something that maybe they were exposed to a lot previously. And so now they have to determine who is this person, what do they want me to do? A lot of time there's miscommunication between the cattle and us as far as where we want that animal to go. I've had new employees that maybe were rushing during work, and didn't think about, okay, I need this animal to go, essentially behind me. So therefore, if I want them to go in that direction, I can't stand in their way. And so the animal gets backed into a corner and the new employee gets essentially run over, right? Because, you're trying to tell the animal, I need you to go this way. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, I will, but you're in the way. So
Amber, help us understand this negative human-cattle interaction. Put a fine point on it for us.
I think about, so we can all relate. I know, think about something that causes you, maybe a person in your life that causes you distress, right? So I don't know. I'll think about like the dentist. Okay. The dentist causes me distress. So some of you might relate to that. I
Yeah,
don't
really.
know. So when I go to see the dentist or I see the dentist, I automatically, my palms start getting sweaty. I could tell that my stress response is kicking in a little bit, right? So that's the same to cattle. So if they have, someone that causes them distress and they see that person, that stress response starts to kick in right away. And you might see them, like we talked about before, trying to avoid that person. So there's also a freeze response that you'll see in cattle where they just freeze up and stand there. And then you're faced with, well, how do I move this animal to where I want them to go, right? But there's the physiological, so that's more of the remembering, the memory part that the animal has. And then there's that physiological response of causing that cortisol release, causing, changes physiologically where, as we all know, animals that are stressed or distressed, I mean, they really, if it's a calf, they're not going to grow as well. Any animal, their immune system takes a hit, right? So you're diverting energy into that stress instead of using it for something good. I don't know, did you guys know there's actually a good form of stress?
I don't know if I've experienced it, Amber, but I do hear that.
No, bear with me, Jim. Bear with me. So there's a eustress, we call it, and that's actually a good stress, a good type of stress. And so I always think about it. So here's my analogy. Okay. If I'm running for exercise, okay, I don't run, but let's say I did. Okay. So I'm going for a jog, I'm running along, I'm getting exercise. That actually is a stressor to your body, right?
Yeah.
But it's a good stress because ultimately, as long as you don't over-exercise, you're actually helping your body. So ultimately, it is a good stress. Now, if I'm jogging through the woods and, a cougar starts chasing me, that now turns into distress, right? That's a bad stress because now I'm running for my life, right? So I think, it's always interesting to think about how there's some things that in our lives and in animals' lives that could be considered good stressors, but then there's also, the bad stress is what we're trying to minimize as much as possible to make sure our animals are healthy and, having a good quality of life. So, anyways.
So Amber, related to that, that's a really interesting topic. So how, because a lot of these things we do with animals are stressful by nature. I mean, they just are. So is there a way we can, your exercise example was a good one. Can we use good stress or minimal stress to get them used to a more stressful situation? And again, I think of The heifer example that Fred had used, I thought was a really good example. So can you think of any examples or any research that's been done, and what can we do to kind of get animals ready for what we know is going to be a stressful situation for them?
Going back to heifers, for example, right? So anything that we can do to take away some of the novelty, so a heifer that's getting ready to calve, it takes time. Oh gosh, I know this, guys. It takes time, right? But if you can run that heifer through the parlor a couple times, or maybe a couple more, to get her used to this is the new environment. This is even run her through with a couple, pen mates or something, just saying, okay, this is what we do. So when it comes time for her to actually go into that parlor and get milked, maybe she can even go in to the parlor stand. You can kind of, mock run through that process of milking her, just so that she gets used to someone touching her udder, things like that. You're removing some of those stressors along the way, if that makes sense, right? So instead of having, 10 stressors thrown at this heifer all at once, you're removing some of those stressors and making it a little bit easier to bear. That's one way we can minimize things is helping animals prepare for something we know is coming up. Obviously, we can't always do that because stress will happen and we're not expecting it, right? I think those are some of the best examples I've noticed with people taking time to run heifers through the parlor. They've had really good results.
I have a question. Your article, you really talked a nice about some safety rules. I mean, we're kind of talking about this interaction between humans and human safety and animal safety. Do you want to run through some common thoughts that you have about safety rules just to keep the human safe and also maybe minimize the stress or the have a better experience for the animal?
Of course. Yep. I've got three that I always kind of keep hitting home with everybody, right? I feel like three is a good number, because people could just rattle off three pretty easily. So the first one, is using a buddy system, which I know is not always an option, but we try to do as much as we can, especially when we're entering a situation that could be potentially hazardous, right? So I think about cases where, if you're dealing with a mother cow that just calved, and you're trying to remove the calf, and this cow is, in particular, that she's going to be a wild one to deal with, that might be a good opportunity to have a buddy, right? Because too often we think, oh, I could just go do this on my own. It's not going to be that big of a deal. But if something were to happen, you need someone that's there that can either try to help you or get help for you. So, using that buddy system is always important. And then we always talk about rushed work, right? Rushed work is not safe work. And actually, rushed work really isn't that efficient either. So, I hope you guys will let me share a story real quick. But I was in this parlor, beautiful parlor, right? The employees are bringing the cattle in, and everything was going pretty well. But they had a milker that was down in the pit that was essentially trying to use point of balance in a way. I don't know if he realized this, but he was walking opposite the cattle as they were coming in, right? So that they would, once you cross those shoulders, they walk past you and you could keep going, keep the line moving in, right? But he was in a hurry. Right. So he was moving super fast. So what happened? Well, he was moving a lot faster than the cows were. So he'd get to the end of the line, stop, turn around, walk back, which does what? The opposite, right? Because as you walk back with the cattle, they stop, right? So it was stop, 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 stop. And then he would sigh, and he would turn around and he would go back opposite the cattle and they would start walking again. So he'd stop, he'd turn around. He did this for like 20 minutes, guys. And I thought, now wait a second. Let's take a timeout. Let's evaluate what we're doing, But so rush work is just not safe work. I mean, the job's gotta get done. We don't have enough time in the day, but ultimately we gotta be safe. So, and then the third one is that you always have to be aware of your surroundings. Okay. So I I'm a big proponent of, you got to have an exit plan or an exit strategy. So any environment they're in, looking around and saying, okay, if I needed to get out of this pen, or if I needed to get out of, this area, how would I do that? Am I going to jump over that gate? Am I going to squeeze through the gate? Am I going to, what is my exit strategy? Because if something happens, you get a feisty cow or who knows what, how are you going to get out of there to make sure you stay safe? And a lot of people don't think about that. I know I didn't think about it very often, right? I would hop into a pen and do what I needed to do and never thought about, oh no, what do I do if, gosh, I was once in Idaho in a pen of cattle and the whole herd turned on me and started rushing, towards me. What do I do, right? What's my exit plan? I wish I had one. No.
Yeah, really. Exactly.
Instead of thinking, oh shoot, now what am I going to do?
Yeah, most people wouldn't say, "Oh, shoot, Amber." I
Yeah,
don't
I know.
think.
I know. I'm trying to keep
Yeah, that's
it
right. Yeah, those are scary. And I think everybody that's worked with animals have kind of sometimes been in those situations one time or another where you go, "Oh, shoot, what do I do now?" And sometimes it's so you just have to do so instinctive because it's not usually like you have a lot of time to think about it, right?
Yeah, yep. So, but those are kind of those three rules that I like to stick to and share with people, and especially those new employees of, just trying to help them learn how to be safer.
Had some good information come out with this. Amber, let's leave the audience with one tidbit of information that you think they need to take away from this. What would it be?
Perfect. So going back to the beginning and really thinking, ultimately our goal was to emphasize that, everyone's well-being is important, and that, once again, it's important to not only you and your family and your friends and but also your cattle. And so once again, you got to take that time. There's actually studies that people, a lot of farmers say the cattle actually makes them feel less stressed. And so I think working with cattle sometimes is therapeutic. And so let's keep it a win-win environment for both humans and the animals by taking care of ourselves so we can do a better job taking care of our animals. That's kind of my last little tidbit.
Great job. I think that's really good advice for all of us all the time. I think you're really right. So thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it and really enjoyed this. So thanks, Fred. I always enjoy working with you. And really nice seeing you again, Amber. And I appreciated all the advice and the ideas that you shared with all of us. I think it's really valuable. Things we take for granted all the time that we just don't always do or follow through or think about. So make sure you check the episode notes for links and additional resources. And again, thanks to all our sponsors that we have. Go to our i29 website. They're all listed there. And with that, I'd like to wish you all a good day. And thank you again very much, Amber and Fred, for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
We'd like to thank our annual sponsors, including our gold sponsor, Iowa Corn Growers Association. Please visit their website at iowacorn.org. We'd also like to thank our silver sponsors, Pioneer, Connor Agri Service, Diamond V, and Central Vet Clinic. I-29 Moo University is an equal opportunity educator. For the full discrimination statement, visit extension.iastate.edu/diversity/ext.